Okay, perfect. So I'm just going to call this meeting to order. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us for the January 2023 meeting of Queens Community Board 11, our first of the new year. So happy new year to everyone. I appreciate it. Hope everybody had a good holiday and New Year's. So my name is Mike Budovin. I am chair of the board. I'm joined by vice chairs Victor Deidres and Henry Euler. Unfortunately, Christine is out ill tonight. Hopefully, she's better quickly and is back soon. Also joined by Joe Marzoliano from our district office, as well as Christina Catino and Jane Bentivanga. Okay, so as you guys can see, we're still meeting on Zoom. So my usual reminder to please try and stay cognizant of the fact that it's easier to interrupt each other. So please do leave your phone or computer on mute when you're not actively speaking. It'll help us to avoid hearing background noise. It'll keep things moving smoothly. Joe and I have the ability to mute people, so we'll be unmuting people when it's their turn to speak, but please remember to put your cell phone back on mute once you're done. And do please be patient with us in case we run into any technical difficulties. Hopefully it doesn't occur. So with that usual introduction, we'll get started with our virtual pledge of allegiance. Joe, as we've been doing, if you can share a picture of the American flag on our screens. Perfect. So you're all welcome to stand up where you are and join along with us if you'd like to while we say the pledge. I pledge allegiance
to the flag.
The United States of America. To the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation
under God,
indivisible,
with
liberty
justice for all.
Okay, perfect. So thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to public participation. And first, I know we're going to be joined by Captain Porto tonight from the 111th. Captain Porto, are you here?
I don't believe he's here yet, no.
Okay, so then why don't we do this while we're waiting for the captain to arrive? I can open up the floor to any elected reps. If you have announcements to make, please put your hand up virtually and we can call on you. Okay, David from Senator Stavisky's office. I see you first.
Hi, everyone. Just want to wish you all a happy new year. Senator is up in Albany, first week of session. She was sworn into office last week. If anyone needs any help, you could feel free to give me a call. It's David Choice at Senator Stavisky's office, 718-445-0004. Or you can email us at stavisky@nysenate.gov. A lot of the district is new for the senator. So we're doing the rounds, meeting everyone. If any civic group, we haven't met with you yet and you'd like us to come out, please give us a call and we'd be happy to get the senator there and I'll try to get her here shortly as well. All right. Thank you, everyone. Happy New Year.
Thank you, David. Appreciate that. Happy New Year to you as well. Sila, you're up next. Well, you got to unmute though.
Sorry, guys. Hey, I miss you all. Happy New Year. I just have a few announcements. In case anyone needs any flood barriers, our office has flood barriers and, of course, COVID test kits. And we also offer legal law services every second Wednesday of the month through CUNY Law Attorney. If you would like, you could call our office and make an appointment. I'll give you the number. I don't think we could write it on the chat, right, Mike? No.
Yeah, that's right. We don't have the chat open, unfortunately.
Okay, so our number is 718-468-0137. If you know anyone that would need any legal assistance, it's every second Wednesday. You would have to call and make an appointment. And that's all I have. And if you ever have any questions, anyone, you guys know where to find us. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you as well.
You too.
Thank you. Okay, Kate from the Queens DA, from Lindisfarne. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Mike? Nice to see everybody. I just wanted to let you know about a couple of upcoming events from our office. Next Thursday, January 12th, we're going to have an MLK event at your college, co-sponsored by your college. That's from 5:30 to 7:30. If you'd like to attend, go on our website and register, please. That's queensda.org. And then the following week, in conjunction with Councilmember Lee and Councilmember Ong, we're doing a Lunar New Year celebration at Queensborough Community College. And that's from 6 to 8. Also, you need to register for that. So go on to our website at queensda.org. And finally, later in the month, we're going to be doing a webinar on child trafficking. January is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month. So we're doing a webinar on January 25th from 11 to 1. It's a very important topic and it's going to be a very useful webinar. Again, you need to register at queensda.org. And if there's ever anything I can do to be of help, please feel free to reach out to me. Nice to see you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Appreciate that and Happy New Year. John, from Senator Liu's office, you're up.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Mike. Good to see you. Good to see Joe. Good to see everyone. Hope you all had a happy bunch of holidays and a good start to the new year. Like my colleague David from Senator Stavisky's office had said, Senator Liu is up at Albany. This is the first full week of session. A lot of exciting things to definitely, you know, kind of get in motion. And obviously, we're going to be following the governor's State of the State address tomorrow very closely, and obviously are focused on, you know, the concerns legislatively from the district here. So besides that, just wanted to mention too, that if you were tracking any bills that, you know, for any legislator, all the numbers do change. So just keep that in mind that new bills came out for this calendar year a couple of days ago. So if you have any questions about that, you know, you can ask me later. Overall though, just the events that we want to make sure that people know about. We have the Department of Finance, NYC DOF, along with our office, Senator Liu's sponsoring at KCS on Thursday, January 26th. That's 2 to 4 p.m. Most of you probably know it from the vaccine site, but we'll make sure that you guys have the flyers. It's over on 32nd Avenue in Bayside over here. Again, it's a good place to come if you have any questions or had any issues with wanting to get your rebates for property taxes filed. And in addition to that, a fun event to piggyback off of what I think my colleague Kay was saying, that, you know, Lunar New Year's is certainly coming up very quickly. And Senator Liu will be having a big, massive, you know, hopefully great time on the 20th, Friday. And we want to invite all of you to come. It's going to be at the Tangram Center. It's a great new structure over there. A lot of great businesses that are going to donate food. They're going to be great cultural performances. Friday, that is the 20th. And that is going to be a time that I don't know if I wrote down, but I believe it's going to be 6 to 8 p.m. But I'll make sure you guys all have that flyer. And hopefully we see a bunch of you there. It's going to be a great time, certainly. So thanks, everyone. I look forward to working with you again in the new year.
Thank you, John. We appreciate that. And Happy New Year to you. Alexis from Councilmember Palladino's office, you're up.
Hi, Happy New Year. I think this is my first time on this meeting. So thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here. So at our office, we have a couple of events coming up. The first one is going to be on January 17th. We're having a Zoom webinar about the property tax benefits that are available to homeowners, condo, and co-ops. And then the following day, we're going to be hosting an in-person session where people can come in and actually speak to a representative from the Department of Finance, and they can ask questions, help, get help with filling out forms, things like that. And then we're going to be hosting a Lunar New Year event on January 18th from 6:30 to 8:30. So that's going to be our district office. That's at 2015 Francis Lewis Boulevard. And we'd love to see you there. And then lastly, this one's not until February 3rd, but we're going to be hosting a religious community leader meet and greet. So we just want to promo that. Anyone, we want to have all of the religious leaders from our area. We want to meet them and talk with them. So that's what we have coming up. And our phone number is 718-619-8611. So if you have any questions, you can always call our office and you can specify that you're from the CB11 meeting and ask to speak to me. My name is Alexis, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Alexis. Appreciate it. Appreciate you coming. Welcome and Happy New Year. Amber from Assemblyman Ed Bronstein's office. You're up.
Hi. Thanks for having me tonight. So Assemblyman Bronstein is up in Albany as well. So I'm representing him tonight, you know, the office on his behalf. So Happy New Year's to everyone. And I just wanted to say thank you to, you know, CB11 people who helped us to coordinate another successful holiday drive. And especially thank you, Joe and Christine and the other, you know, office members there to help collecting the toys who, you know, like who, you know, and we had gathered a lot of toys and that was brought a lot of smiles to the, you know, like organizations that are helping, you know, like a kids in need. So, and that's it. So thank you for having me tonight. So, and I'll leave my phone number here. It's 708-357-3580. That is our district office number. Thank you.
Thank you, Amber. And thank you for working with us on the toy job. We appreciate it as always. Susanna from Assemblymember Rosick's office.
Yes, Susanna here. I'm here representing Assemblywoman Neely Rosick tonight. She is up in Albany along with the other assembly members and state senators. And I just wanted to let you all know that we are having an event, a DOF event. So if you have any questions on rebates or exemptions, feel free to come by the event. It's next Thursday, January 19th from 4 to 8 p.m. at 8241 Parsons Boulevard. And that is on Gothels and Parsons Boulevard. Thank you for having me tonight and Happy New Year.
Okay, thank you so much, Suzanne. Appreciate that. I appreciate all of our elected official reps for all the work that you guys do. I hope you all had a great New Year's and we look forward to working with you guys in 2023. So I'm just checking once more. Do we have Captain Porto? Not seeing him yet, right, Joe?
No, he's not in here.
Okay, understood. So I'm going to go, Sean. Sean Walsh signed up to for public participation this month. Sean, I think I saw you here. I'm just looking for your...
I'm here.
Okay, perfect.
I don't see Sean... the video, but go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, no, we don't need video. That's fine. As usual, you have 3 minutes. And when you have 1 minute left, I'll just put my finger up like so and let you know. And then whenever we're finished with the 3 minutes, if you, I'll let you know. And if you can just finish your thought, I appreciate it.
Okay.
So the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, Happy New Year to everybody and hope for a good new year for everyone. It's coming one, a healthy one. I want to speak tonight about an issue that's called affordable housing. I know Paul Graziano is going to speak later and I'm not going to cover what he's going to do. He's going to do a good presentation on that tonight. But what I want to do emphasize and bring to your attention some of the development in Douglaston on the question of affordable housing. Some of you may know that there was a zoning change on the corner Douglaston and Northern Boulevard, and there's an apartment house there that was sold to everyone on the basis that would be affordable housing. The affordable housing signs have been ripped down. The luxury signs have now gone up on the scaffolding that's around the building. So a studio, small, and it is a small studio at the building is $3,000 a month. But that's not affordable. So we have a little integrity problem. Our previous council person ran off, put that through with his friend on the basis it was affordable housing. It's not affordable housing. We look to other places in the community, the possible development of affordable housing, but nobody's bothering to look at them. I found it ironic, and I hope you all read the editorial today in the New York Times reference to affordable housing, housing stock, and a few other items for the governor's package that's coming out tomorrow. As you know, that what happened was that prior to the election, the governor backed out and people in the assembly backed out in terms of filing ADU changes and changes in the multiple dwelling law. Now that the election is over, they come forward and bringing that issue back up again. It's very simple principle. I think you have to keep this in the back of your mind. The reason why affordable housing is a problem in New York City is because land values are so high. And whatever developer and whatever benefits you give to developer don't come anywhere near absorbing the penalty of that huge price of land. So they can never, quote, build affordable housing, entry housing. They can reduce it a little bit, but now they're given benefits to get larger buildings, whether it be in Manhattan, and the same issues affecting people in Village, Greenwich Village. Same thing is happening to people in the Upper East and West Side of Manhattan. It isn't just limited to us. So the question really is in developing affordable housing. The issue that needs to be addressed is where do we get land that's free? I think you're all familiar with Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper, and there are other developments in the city, including City Housing. In all those cases, the land was basically given to a developer or developed by the city, and they were able to keep rents down in that way. Condemnation was used in the Peter Cooper Stuyvesant approach many years ago. So the question is here, not lining the pockets for the politicians who are given campaign contributions to give special incentives, which really don't give us affordable housing. I cited just one example.
Sean, I apologize. If you could please wrap up.
Yeah, I'm wrapping up. So okay, thank you. Please look to that and consider, and Paul's going to go in great detail on that. Understand why it's hard to do affordable housing. And any of these gimmicks being done right now for somebody who is a former council, current council member, a member of the assembly or the Senate, is the same issue that's out there. We need to find places. I find it highly ironic that public parkland, which is part of, I still call Shea Stadium, City Field, okay? They want to put a casino there, not a hospital, not a school, and not affordable housing. The land they want to put the casino is public land. It cannot be alienated without an act of the legislature or the governor. It's parkland. So if we want to put something there, why are we living with a casino? How we reduced our values to that point. Thank you very much. You have a good night.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate your time. Thank you for speaking. I think Captain Porto has entered now. Captain, are you here? Joe, do we see the captain?
He was here. Oh, he's coming in again. Hold on one second. He must have left and come back.
Okay. Just bear with us one second, folks. Captain Porto? I see you're connecting to audio. Captain Porto, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello.
Hey, Captain. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate you coming to give us the update from the 111th. Before you do that, I did want to say one thing and make one announcement, and it's a thank you to a couple of officers of yours, Officer Zhang and Officer Albano, okay. For some work they did. There was a house breaking, in the community that involved one of our board members, and apparently they did a fantastic job. An arrest was made, and the work they did was excellent. And so we wanted to thank the 111th and those officers in particular for their great work. So with that being said, I'll pass it over to you for the update.
First of all, thank you very much. And all the hard work that my officers do, I absolutely love talking about it. It has nothing to do with me. It actually has a lot to do with the officers and their hard work they're putting forth out there on a daily basis. So just to speak on that burglary arrest, yes, beautiful work. Live burglary. He's coming out of the house. He's on his phone. And these officers pursue him on foot, chase him down and actually get him. Great police work. Job well done. And this precinct has been dealing with some issues with burglaries throughout the holiday season. And what I've been saying in my community board meetings, and just whoever I'm speaking to, whether I'm on foot, whether I'm in my car, whether I'm out there on the street, I tell everybody all the time, and I'll tell everybody on this forum as well, lock your doors, continue to lock your doors, continue to lock your vehicle doors. Do not leave your vehicle unlocked. Do not leave your keys in the vehicle. Just very simple stuff to make sure that you're not a victim unnecessarily. So I want to give you a little bit of good news. We're getting some more police officers, and we're going to have a field training unit. And what my main focus of this field training unit is going to be the start of their day is typically going to be at the school dismissal. Sector Charlie, the main heart of this precinct, is where the high schools are. So I'm going to have them do the school dismissal. And then when that's over with, I'm going to post change them to our business district on Bell Boulevard. Basically work and enforce quality of life issues with the bars and all the bars that are on Bell Boulevard. So that's a bit of positive news. We'll have a couple of more offices out there. I would love more, of course. The more the merrier, but we're also a team, and we're also going to make do with whatever we have. Just to give you a little bit of an update on where we stand with crime. When I first took over, there was some issues with our robberies, especially around the schools. And I have to say that we were able to clip off about 100 percentage points of robberies year to date. And that's once again due to the great police work by my officers and, you know, their vigilance out there on patrol and their just being noticeable out there. And I send a lot of resources to the schools for the school dismissal. So robberies, we were able to clip off 100 percentage point from the robberies, especially those school robberies. We're still having some issues with burglaries. And I have my burglary zone set and I have my deployment strategy and I'm putting my officers where I need to put them. But it's a teamwork. It's all of us on this phone call. It's all of us together working as a team. Even though it may sound so minor and so minute, a little message of maybe, hey, we could keep that ladder in a yard locked up, or maybe put it in our garage locked up, because people do take those ladders and they put them up to the second floor window and they come into the backyard. Burglaries are typically a hard arrest to make and an actually hard crime to fight, because, you know, typically when you're driving around in a residential area, it's very hard to, you know, look down a side and see somebody. If they're going into the rear of the entrance, you'll never see them. So it's just very hard. I also want to talk about grand larceny autos, which I've been seeing a spike, and just want to put this information out there very, very importantly. Leaving items in your car, and I call these sometimes a crime of opportunity. If an individual drives by or walks by a desolate area and looks in a car and sees a package, he may pull the door handle. He may pull that door handle and say, nobody's around, and take the property in that vehicle. He also may say, okay, no one's around, maybe I can get away with trying to take this car. And crimes of opportunity like that, we want to try and curtail. What do I mean by that? I mean, don't leave your packages in your cars. Don't leave the vehicle unlocked. Don't leave the key fob in the car. This is just a recipe for them to easily be able to take your vehicle. And I don't want to see that happen to anybody. I don't want to see any crime happen to anybody. But, you know, picture coming out looking for your car after a long day's work and it's not there. So just little tips. Little things that I've been seeing. Alley Pond Park area, parking it overnight or parking it in a desolate area. Make sure you check on that car if you absolutely have to. I understand, but make sure you're checking on that car or safeguarding that car as best as you can. And I just want to warn everybody else also regarding a pattern situation with Kias. There's something on the internet that all you need is a USB and a phone, really, to jump a car, a jumper Kia. So if you're leaving your key in that car, your fob, and they get in and out of the car, their USB, they're able to program to start it. So those of you with a Kia, just make sure you're paying attention to the mechanisms in place to lock and basically make sure you're taking care of whatever you need to take care of with security measures. So with that being said, I want to thank you for thanking my officers, Albano and Zhang. A couple of other great arrests happened. There was another burglary that occurred just on Friday. An individual was in someone's home, and the woman that lived there saw him in the bedroom. He actually put forth a little bit of a fight with her and her husband. They were able to call 911. We respond, we catch him. So there's great work done. I also want to talk about another great piece of work that was done. An individual brought a firearm into the school. And great, great, great teamwork by school safety. Great, great teamwork by school safety and our police, my 111 officers, to be notified of an individual with a firearm that drops it on the ground. He's seen on surveillance camera footage. Quick thinking, no incident whatsoever. We now take a live firearm off the street. So I have nothing but positives to say about the members of the precinct, nothing to say about what's going on with the hard work. We still have work to do. I think we're trending. And I think the teamwork, me, you, everybody on this call together, just listening to those minor things and just trying to work it together where we are paying attention and making sure we're keeping us and our family safe will go a long way. So with that being said, you'll have some more officers out there, young officers on foot. Those of you that are in the business district area, you'll get to see them driving around in field training autos. And you'll see the usual people you would be seeing at the schools, my school posts and my neighborhood coordination offices. So otherwise, I have my crime prevention officer here. Would you like to say a few words?
Sure, sure.
My crime prevention officer, Detective Ferraris, is here. I'd just like him to say hello and say a few things if you guys are okay with that.
Absolutely, sure.
It's good to see everybody again. How is everybody? Just to follow up on what the captain said. The captain spoke about burglaries, spoke about GLAs. I just wanted to talk about some of the services that we offer here at the 111, some of the services that I could perform free of charge. Just give me a ring. I'll give you my contact information at the end. We do VIN etching on all cars. I take the VIN number of the car, put it on every window, makes it a little less desirable to steal. On top of that, we also have the combat auto theft program. That's something that can register any car, and the car is stopped or could be stopped after hours if it's seen on the street, just to make sure that it's not stolen. Yeah, obviously, you can drive your car whenever you want, but if you have that sticker in the window, it allows us just to check the car out, make sure it's not stolen. And also, I do security surveys of commercial properties and residential properties. I'll come out to your business. I'll come out to your home, again, free of charge. I'll make suggestions on how to better secure the property, trying to avoid people getting burglarized. And lastly, I just want to talk about some scams that targeted our senior citizens. A lot of times they'll call up senior citizens and they'll use a ploy stating that one of their family members is in trouble, one of their family members might be arrested, and they're gonna request money to try and get them out of trouble. A lot of times older citizens do fall victim to this. And the MO is that they request money through either Bitcoin or through gift cards, untraceable means. Just hang up. It's a scam. You could always call your loved one later to confirm. Nobody would ever ask you for money like that over the phone. But everything else I was going to talk about, the good captain spoke of already. So just wanted to say hello. Anybody wants to give me a call, my phone number is 718-279-5281. And if I don't pick up right away, I apologize, probably because I'm out in the field. Just leave me a message and we'll get back to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Detective. Thank you, Captain. We appreciate it. Glad to hear that we have more officers going to be on foot patrol. That's great. And glad to hear about some of the successes that we've already experienced. That's fantastic. And I hope that you and all the rest of the members of the 111th had a great and happy new year.
Oh, thank you very much. And I wish all of you a happy new year as well. One quick thing, Mike, I logged in originally on Teams. I'm actually on Zoom now. So I was, one of them's not working. So just future references, I was kind of waiting around what was going on. And then I put on the other link. So that's how I ended up here, 10 minutes late or whatever it is. But
okay, it's no problem. I appreciate it. It's good to know that. Thank you.
All right. Everybody be well. Have a great night. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Captain. You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. So now we are going to conduct roll call, followed by the acceptance of the minutes from our December meeting, which were circulated in advance. Please bear with us while we go through each board member's name for attendance, and then we can go through again for a voice vote on acceptance of the minutes. Unless, Joe, did you do your little attendance trick here to limit roll call?
Yes. So I took the roll call for people that I saw come here into the meeting. So I'm going to be calling the names of the folks that I don't see in front of me. If you do not hear your name, it's because I have you already marked down for attendance. Cerezo. Chu. Chin.
Here.
Ben.
Justin, I'm here.
Okay, I have you, Sharon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Di Benedetto. Paul. Donahue? Mary?
Here. Here.
Ferrazzoli? Garippa?
Here.
Okay. Gizetti?
Here.
Okay. Jadis? Hader? Mahalsis? And Rastogi? Okay, folks, we do have a quorum.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. So now we're going to vote on acceptance of the December meeting minutes. Again, these were circulated in advance. Do I have a motion to approve the December minutes?
Hello? No.
Second.
I have it.
Michelle. Okay, let's get the motion on the floor first, then we can have discussion on the motion, okay? Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion.
Okay, I heard Stefan second.
Michelle.
Second.
Okay, I heard Michelle with the second. Discussion on the motion. Joan, did I hear you had a comment?
I had said so moved. I said it about three times.
No, I believe Mary had a comment.
Mary. Okay, sorry, Mary.
Okay. On the last page, page four, it has... On the vote, okay, it says abstain, and then it mentions Susan, Carmen, my name, Henry Eula. Anyway, it says abstain. We didn't abstain. We opposed.
Yes, yes, we caught that clerical error this week, and we've already corrected that. An amended version will go out. That was a mistake we caught, yes.
Oh, okay. Very
okay,
good. Thank
just
you.
Really quickly for the purposes of formality, Stefan and Michelle, you're okay with the amended version correcting that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. So yes. As amended, thank you. So as amended with that correction, any other discussion on the motion? Okay, I'm going to call a question here to approve the minutes with that one correction. Joe?
Okay. Aviles? Adriana?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm also the president of the Matt Finkel fan club. So.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Budabin.
Yes.
Burke.
Yes.
Chin.
Yes.
Kayato.
Yes.
Dadris.
Yes.
December. December?
Yes, yes.
Donahue?
Yes.
Euler?
Yes.
Evans?
Yes.
Ferrazzoli? I'm sorry. Fields?
Yes.
Vilas? Elias? I'm going to move on. Jack?
Yes.
Fuentes Padilla.
Yes.
Okay. Gallatin.
Yes.
Garippa.
Yes.
Gizetti.
Yes.
Bolia.
Yes.
Haji Constantino.
Yes.
Haber.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jethwani.
Yes.
Kelly.
Yes.
Lanzetta.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Liotto.
Yes.
Martino.
Yes.
Mazza.
Yes.
Miller.
Yes.
Montgomery.
Yes.
Patel.
Yes.
Talbier.
Yes.
Vavawa.
Yes.
Copa.
Yes.
Shearer.
Yes.
Shiram.
Yes.
Turner.
Yes.
And Wong.
Yes.
Okay, motion passes.
Okay, thanks everyone. Appreciate it. We're going to move on to chairperson's announcements. So just a few things. This last month, we had a public safety and licensing committee meeting. I want to thank Jack for chairing that. Appreciate it. This month, what we have currently scheduled is this Wednesday. We have a Doug zoning committee meeting, 7:30 on Zoom, and a public relations committee meeting on the 24th. Again on Zoom. So if you're a part of those committees or want to attend, please do so. Also wanted to mention that community board applications are now up and will be due soon. So if it's your year to reapply, please make sure that you go ahead and do that. If you have questions about where you can get the application or you know how you can get a hold of it, please contact the office and let us know. But this is a reminder to everybody to get on top of that if this is your year to apply or to reapply rather. Okay. We have a presentation that's going to be made during this segment, as was alluded to earlier, by Paul Graziano, who's going to speak on Mayor Adams' Get Stuff Built proposal. Paul, are you here?
I am here.
Okay, perfect. So, Paul, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year, everybody. Unfortunately, you have to hear my voice again on an issue that unfortunately you've heard my voice too many times in recent months and years. So let's dig right in. First of all, I just want to make sure, Joe, did you give everybody the PDF?
I do not have a PDF. If you want to screen share, I have you co-host it here.
No, I can't do that. Can I send it to you right now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let me just show it to you. It's easy. I thought that someone had sent it to you. Relying on De Benedetto again, you know how that goes. So let me, I'm joking, of course. Let me send this over real quick.
You can send it straight to Jay Marzulliano.
Yeah, I'm literally sending it right to you. I think, Mike, you're on here too. So hold on a second. Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, you got it. So there it is. All right, so let me, while you're kind of setting this up, let me kind of preface everything real quick. So, you know, we all know what happened 2 years ago with Planning Together. We all know what happened with the governor a year ago today. And we know that in the last month, there has been a real push from first the governor, then the mayor, and then, not to be outdone, the Speaker of the City Council, to all sort of jump on the bandwagon of the same issues that we were talking about before, which is affordable housing, development, et cetera. And, you know, again, let's preface all of this by saying that you know, creating affordable housing is not a boogeyman. It's how it's done. It's where it's done. There we go. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. So one of the things that the mayor came out with earlier this year was a document called City of Yes. And that was a series of proposed zoning changes that were being put forth by the Department of City Planning. And this sort of goes hand in hand with that. So this is called Get Stuff Built. And this was a committee called the BLAST Committee. And I don't know what the acronym stood for. I can't remember. BLAST. But one of the things I think you as community board members and the public should know is that the list of, 70 plus stakeholders were essentially city agencies city agencies, housing groups, developers, and land use lawyers. There was not a single civic or good government group there, pretty much. I think we were represented by the Queens and Bronx Building Association and the Queens chapter of the American Institute of Architects. So this does not really, you know, we as citizens were not really on this august panel. So what I'll say is that those folks came up with a list of 111 proposals, line item proposals, which is what you're seeing here, in a 68-page report. And the reason I did it this way was because if we actually went through the report item by item, it would take us something like 3 hours. And by doing this, we should be able to blow through this in 30 to 40 minutes. But I want to explain what I did here. So what you see here is page one, which is, this is the appendix of the detailed list of initiatives. There are 111 initiatives. On the left, you see first a title, which has to do with city environmental quality review. So this is sort of the heading of the area of that particular section, and then improving the quality of CECRA. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's essentially the environmental review that most rezonings and big development projects have to go through. the mayor, when he first rolled this out about a month ago, he basically said one of his goals was to remove environmental review for less than, and get ready for it, drum roll, 200 units or less of any project, which, you know, maybe a 200 unit building in a high density area of Manhattan doesn't seem like a lot, but a 200 unit building or project in Douglaston or Bayside is a hell of a project. So this first section is dealing with that. So what we're going to do is we're going to go section by section. I'm going to explain again. On the left are the headings for each of these. I will go into detail about some of them. Then you'll see there's a section that says approval needed for change to the right of that. The mayor is saying that most of these are agency changes. They don't need city council approval. They don't need state approval. But some critical ones absolutely need city and ULURP approval, and some need state approval. And I also disagree. I think some of these quote unquote agency changes actually need more than just an agency change. I think they're trying to promote this as sort of simple changes, but they're not. And then when you see on the right, it says grade. The grades are simple. Red means bad, green means good, and yellow is either neutral or there's not enough information for me to assess it to really make a recommendation, but that doesn't mean it couldn't be bad or it couldn't be good. Usually leaning towards the bad, but I gave it the benefit of the doubt. So we're going to try to blow through these. What I would ask of the community board, I think this is the fastest way to do this, is as I go through this by section, so this is section one, if people have any questions about any of these, and again, I'm going to blow through these. Some of them, I will give a quick description of what they are, especially the red ones. But if there's anything that people want information about or want to ask questions, ask about it in that section, because then we can finish that section and move on to the next section. Is everybody okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine, Paul, as long as we stay cognizant of time.
Exactly.
And,
then,
and just to note here, so this is your own personal perspective, this red and yellow, green, correct? This is your opinion on these matters.
This is as an expert urban planner. This is my opinion. I brought this to the Queen Civic Congress. They thought it was very helpful. I understand Henry is the one who brought it to the board, which thank you, Henry, for making more work for me. And I will be showing this to Community Board 8 on Wednesday, just to let you know. So
okay.
Yes, thank it you. Is as an expert, it is my opinion. Obviously, other people can have other opinions about this, but other architects and planners have also shown caution to some of these things that I flagged as well. So let's get started, if that's okay.
Yep.
Okay. So let's start with the first ones. As you see, restructured detailed traffic and mobile source air quality and noise analysis, you're going to see a number of things having to do with traffic here. One of the big issues that comes up with development projects are traffic analysis and studies. And what they essentially want to do in a number of these things is in essence, get rid of them. Either lower them to the point that they don't mean anything, or they want to change the thresholds or the numbers so that, you know, they can kind of breeze through them. And again, this goes back to that statement that I was making, that a lot of this has to do with removing environmental review for 200 units or less of development. This is, you know, the first one is to change the methodology based on vehicle delay. And we all know when you're looking at a big development, traffic counts are important and proposed or future traffic based on that development is very important. So they kind of want to get out of that. The next one is amend city type 2 list. Okay, so this has to do with classifications of particular projects. And whenever you see something like this, where it says city type 2 list, that's basically a list of projects that get flagged, right? So these are things that bring concern in the kind of review that gets done. So that what they want to do is remove some of those. That's what the exemption is about. The next one is advocate for, let me just move, because I'm looking at the details here. Advocate for amendment of state type 2. Again, that's a similar thing. As you can see, that one is flagged that would have to be changed at the state level. That's a big one. I mean, this is to give you some examples that they give. And again, they're always, the city, in my opinion, is always giving the most innocuous examples. This has to do with certain resiliency measures and alternative energy installations. If you don't know what happened in the City of Yes proposal, one of the proposals that they're pushing for is to create battery arrays on the tops of buildings all over the city to create areas for storage for solar and wind, et cetera, which again, sounds great on the surface, but they're talking about exempting these from environmental review. And they want to change it. So currently they only cover about 20% of a rooftop. They want to change it to 100% of a rooftop with giant batteries on top. So it's that kind of stuff that sounds innocuous in the way they describe it, but it could have serious consequences. The next one is provide CEQA technical manual guidance to distinguish analysis of site-specific versus area-wide analysis. Again, I look at that as more of a neutral issue. So we can come back to that if people have questions. Next one, create standard templates. Again, this sounds on the face of it like, oh, that could be a good idea to create a standard template for EAS, that's an environmental assessment statement, right? For chapters, appendices, executive summary. The problem with this, and as you see, as you'll go through this document, anytime you try to streamline or fast track projects and get into a format that sets that up, every project is different. Every project has specifics. If you go from a form that calls for long form responses, because there are specifics that are to a particular project and you change it into a checklist, you're getting rid of the meat of the subject that you have to talk about that could be the things that are really flagging a project that the public, that me and you are not going to be able to figure out if it's just a checklist, which is essentially what they want to do there. Same thing with the next one, standardized EAS format for projects without impacts. The next one is projects with impacts, same issues. Okay, the next one that I mentioned is streamline reasonable worst case development scenario guidance. That's more of a guidance issue. That's why, again, I put it as neutral. It's more about giving the applicants guidance on how to approach that. I don't have a problem with that. Same thing with methodologies for socioeconomic and community facility analysis. Again, it's just updating the methodology. It's not updating other, it's aggregating things. It's not getting rid of things. The next one is establish standard development mitigation funds. Major red flag here. Yeah, if you want to point to them as I'm going, Joe, I don't know, or highlight it. Yeah, there you go. That's a big one, because what that is going to do is it's going to put fixed dollar amounts to projects. And we all know that that's kind of a really scary thing to, well, again, I'm editorializing here, but I think understanding that every contaminated site has different problems and mitigation has different solutions and different dollars connected to it. So to come up with a standard development mitigation fund methodology is it's a little scary. It sounds almost like they're trying to limit the amount of money that would be spent to mitigate. Okay, next one is adjust thresholds for detailed transportation analysis and impact. That goes back to what I said before. They just want to essentially get rid of traffic analysis. Next one is simplify background project, no action trip assignments, same thing. Simplify parking analysis and elimination of parking shortfalls. I don't think I have to explain that at all. Update stationary source air quality analysis methodology. That one is just, here we go. That has to do with, again, HVAC systems on buildings. And I think that's extremely important that, and the reason I red flagged it is I'm concerned that it's going to become something where, again, where a project would get flagged because their HVAC systems are going to be affecting adjacent properties. That's not going to happen under a new analysis methodology. Next is revised mobile air quality screening, fairly neutral on that. Next one is eliminate transportation section of construction analysis. Same thing, get rid of traffic studies. We don't want them anymore. Update construction air quality analysis methodology, same thing. Update construction noise methodology, same thing. And finally, establish a training program for CEQA consultants. That, again, I figure that is fairly neutral. Okay, are there any questions or comments on this section? Anybody? Okay, let's go to the next part. Getting better data inputs, sharing data through a public portal.
Sorry, Paul. Sorry, George, you have a question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
Paul, I appreciate, first of all, thank you for presenting. You have a breadth and depth of knowledge that is unparalleled. So I appreciate that. I have a couple, well, let's just focus on one question.
Joe, maybe you can scroll it back to the other page. Yeah.
Go ahead, your concern regarding
which one?
I believe it's the third one. You had mentioned it very early regarding solar panels on roofs.
No. It wasn't solar panels on roofs. It's what they're proposing in the city of Yes, which is this goes hand in hand. It's not solar panels on roofs. It's giant batteries that are a story high that will take up entire 100% of rooftops. And the problem with that is, unlike solar panels, which are not dangerous, these battery systems can be extremely dangerous. And the idea that they want to exempt these from CECRA. And again, if the technology catches up with it, that's fine. But if they it seems like the administration wants to jump the gun on this stuff until before the technology has been deemed safe. And that's my concern about it. And if it were taking up a small portion of the roof, it was a small battery array, it would be one thing. But to have an entire roof line filled with something that's kilowatts and kilowatts of storage of batteries, I'm throwing it out there that this is a major change they're looking to do. And as I said, this is even one of the more innocuous things that they're mentioning. Lots of other changes could occur as well that they want to try to exempt from the CECRA. So they haven't been very, all of these things are basically one and two sentence bullet points. They haven't been very clear about their actual intent on a lot of these things. So I'm taking a cautionary approach to this. This is why I'm putting this as a red, because when I see this, it gets me very concerned. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions, comments?
I have a question. This is Michelle Fills here. I wanted to ask in regards to CECRA and reducing the oversight in regards to the environmental testing, did they take in consideration the protected wetlands in the five boroughs, or including Long Island? Did they consider any of those factors?
Well, wetlands are actually controlled by the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, if they are considered state protected wetlands, which are class one freshwater or brackish or saltwater wetlands. We have some of those in our district, but this isn't really about the environmental wetlands. This is under CECRA, it's an environmental review of projects. This is like when someone wants to develop something, how it will affect CECRA. So for example, it could relate to a project next to wetlands. You're right. It could be something could be adjacent to wetlands. The problem is the city has not really defined what they want to exempt.
Okay.
They only gave a few examples. They didn't give a very, which is again why I flagged it red, because if they're giving these as their innocuous examples, I can just imagine what they may actually want to do more than that. As you can tell, I have somewhat questionable faith in the intent of some of these amendments that they're trying to make. So certainly, obviously, if wetlands were affected, it would be of great concern to everybody.
Right.
Right.
Paul, this is Carmen. I just want to thank you because to me, you highlighting how they just want to take away a lot of the important check and balance that are in place so that they could get through, just building whatever they want. So I just want to thank you for highlighting that.
Don't thank me yet. We have another 95 to go through.
Yeah, but so far I see That you're doing a good job. So
thank you so much.
On that note, Paul, as we go forward, can we focus? I'm concerned about time. Can we focus on the red issues on the next pages and rather than the yellow and green? I'm just seeing how we're moving so far. I'm getting concerned about how long it's going
to
take.
Sure. Thanks. Absolutely. You got it. Go ahead. So go ahead, Joe. Move to the next page. Okay. So you'll see in the next two sections, there's only two little red pieces, right? One is for the first part, develop seasonal adjustment factors for traffic counting. Now that's an interesting one because what they want to do is right now, there is a process where basically in the summer and the holidays in the winter, they do not include the those times when they're doing traffic counts because the traffic counts can be skewed. Like in the summertime, there's less traffic because there's fewer people around. Same thing with the holidays. So what they want to do is get rid of those. They want to get rid of those because they don't want to hold up projects based on that. And they just want to come up with some number that will effectively be a basic number that they're going to use as that number all the time, which doesn't make any sense. So that's why I red flagged that. The rest of that stuff is very neutral in terms of data inputs. And then breaking down silos among city agencies, that's the next section. Expand mechanisms such as e-designations for additional action types. So an e-designation typically comes when people are looking to get a Board of Standards and Appeals or a zoning change for a contaminated property. And what this really is about is creating e-designations for projects that should never, ever be approved. So these are projects that would be on properties that should not be redeveloped at all. And what they want to do is essentially create e-designations for things that aren't currently considered. And that's why I flagged it. And that has to go through ULURP and City Council. So I don't believe that should happen. Are there any questions on those two sections? Okay, let's go to the next one. This one's, that one. Improving brevity in CECRA. So as you can see, we're getting into the same thing with the CECRA. All of these things are about creating standard templates, simplifying chapters, combining different sections. If you've ever, I'm sure you guys on the board have looked at some of these environmental reviews. These reports sometimes are 1,000 pages long, but there's a reason that they're 1,000 pages long because there's so many different subjects that you have to respond to. And what they want to do is combine these sections. I think that's a problem. I think that these are, it's a way to get around looking at these issues. So I have a problem with that. If you want to continue on, if anybody has a comment about any of those, I don't know if you do or not, but again, removing those or mushing these together instead of looking at them as separate issues, I think is a problem. Next. Reducing the back and forth between DCP staff and applicants. This has to do, if Paul Graziano is an applicant and wants a rezoning, he goes to the DCP staff prior to getting a ULURP, right? Prior to getting a zoning change, you go there in what's called the pre-certification process. And as you know, the pre-certification process can go on for years and years and years before a project gets stamped. And then it actually goes to ULURP and goes to the community board and the borough president, et cetera, through the ULURP process. What they essentially want to do is remove some of those, I think you said it best, Carmen, those checks and balances by constraining the DCP staff and forcing them to fast track the process prior to certification, where they're deliberating over these issues and writing comments and really telling the applicants like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. You should be doing this because this isn't going to be allowed and this, et cetera. I really am shocked that they would push this. Similarly, with the simplify application requirements and standards, it's the same thing. So both of those things are deeply concerning, especially as a practitioner, as an urban planner myself. I find that kind of shocking that they would push for that. The next section is creating a fast lane for review by DCP staff for smaller scale projects. Again, what is the definition of smaller scale? It seems that the definition is 200 units or less. That's not smaller scale to me. So I'm really not sure what that is. In the document itself, it gives examples of some of those, and I can just give one or two of those. For example, creating for, again, to minimize rounds, they're using examples as special permits, such as fresh special permits, which have to do with those supermarkets in certain lower income neighborhoods, and waterfront zoning compliance, which to me is not a minor thing at all. So again, that's concerning. Similarly, establish faster, clearer decision-making process. That gets back to the faster, less than the clearer, more about faster, fast-tracking, streamlining. And then getting to other things below, right-size discretionary review processes that do not benefit from extensive feedback. Again, anytime I see the word right size, that's code for removing checks and balances and processes to a project's review. So that I want to know what their definition of right size is. I'm not very optimistic about it. And then remove special permits for energy efficiency projects. I kind of mentioned that has to, again, has to do with the same battery stuff that I was talking about before. And there are other issues too, which were brought up at meetings that I've had about this already, that the definition of energy efficiency sounds very positive, but in some cases it's actually not. So, and other people were giving examples of that. So those are the two things there. Improving public participation in the land use process, that goes, again, established procedure for earlier filing of ULURP applications. That has to do, again, where they can, what they want to do is fast track it at DCP for pre-certification and then give it to the community boards earlier. But in essence, what it will do is it would, currently, many developers will come to the community board before something goes to ULURP. I'm sure that's happened at board 11, where a developer comes and says, well, I'm planning to put this into ULURP, but I want to show you what it's about beforehand. They want to get rid of that essentially and make it so that the community board sees something faster. But I think oftentimes the community board needs something to look at more than once before they can actually get a grasp at it, of it, or the public does anyway. So I have a problem with that. Keep going. Next page. Again, if anybody has any questions, feel free to jump in. I know I've been breezing through these because I know that Mike's concerned about it. Does anyone have any questions so far? Okay. So again, now we get into building permitting process. The first two things I flagged are deep concern, deep, deep concern. Currently, many of the most important safety decisions made on projects have to be signed off by the fire department, right? We're talking about fire safety, exits, egress, ingress, sprinkler systems, fire suppression systems, etc. They want to turn that over to the Department of Buildings. I think this is a terrible, terrible idea. And the reason I think this is a terrible idea is that the DOB has a terrible record on approving projects. And as you can see, the next line below, facilitate remote DOB inspections. That means giving a camera to an applicant and having the inspector inspect a project with someone walking around with a camera. And this is insane as far as I'm concerned. But this gets to the heart of what we're talking about. It's about streamlining, getting rid of regulatory red tape, quote unquote, and frankly, getting rid of the things that guarantee safety and other building decisions that need to go through a regular process that they're trying to get rid of. The next one is create pilot program to utilize automated code check software. Same thing. Instead of a human being checking whether someone has done all of their due diligence on getting their paperwork so that they can get their permits, they want to throw it through so that a software program will check their paperwork to see if they've, you know, if all their projects are up to code. That's outrageous. It's totally outrageous. It should not happen, period. Simplify sewer line inspections. That gets to a different issue. Sewer lines are something that I think as we're getting into climate change and other issues, we've been learning more about how sewer systems work or don't work. I don't think simplifying sewer line inspections is a good idea. I think there needs to be more sewer line inspections and deeper sewer lines inspections, because every project that comes in increases strain and stress on those sewer lines. So I think that's, again, counterintuitive. Next one, combine the waterfront permitting function of small business services with DOB. I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Why would DOB give the permitting when Small Business Services has such an important role in that? Small Business Services is a completely different agency. It has nothing to do with DOB. And there are different reasons why Small Business Services give permits for a project that has nothing to do with the Department of Buildings. So it doesn't make any sense. Streamline the filing process for affordable housing projects on city-owned property. Now, while there's a real push for affordable housing, I will tell you what that is. City-owned property, with the city-owned property they're talking about, for example, are community gardens. Community gardens have been a huge battle between the community the folks who are defending community gardens and folks who are demanding affordable housing. This seems to me like a fast track to get rid of every single community garden in the city. Maybe I'm overstating it, but that's the kind of thing that affordable housing would do, not to mention lots of other city-owned property. The city owns an enormous amount of property that you know, that they would normally have to go through rigorous examination before an affordable housing project would go in. And now to get rid of that is kind of nuts.
What's wrong with that streamlining? Are they telling you get together, work it out beforehand?
No. Many, what the streamlining the process, it's not about getting it together beforehand. It's about removing public review. It's about getting rid of the benchmarks that you need to make this happen. And essentially, like I said, currently there are checks that happen when the city wants to do things. Here, essentially, yes, again, this is a great, I'll read you the sentence so you understand. Currently, DOB offers expedited service to affordable housing projects through the Affordable Housing Hub. Because flagging affordable housing projects to DOB occurs in various ways, they don't give any examples, the process needs to be streamlined to avoid the back and forth between the applicant, HPD, and DOB, and to provide further clarity on the associated requirements or characteristics that may impact DOB review. So,
seems like it's very innocuous. All they have to do is to get represented from the three agencies, sit down, work it out. Simple.
Well, again, they're not saying what various ways are, right? It's not going into the details. If they were saying this is just going to cut out the middlemen between the three agencies, that's one thing. That's not what I don't believe that's what the intent of this is. I may be wrong, but I'm telling you from reading this and seeing what the intent.
I want to tell you, those of us who work in the city, this is the most of the time you really want to get it done. That's what happens. You bring everybody in one room, close the door, and say you have 3 days, finish. That's what
we do. Fair enough. So the next one is simplify the LPC process for approving projects with as-of-right zoning and remove DOB zoning review as a prerequisite to LPC approval. I'm sure as a district that has historic districts in their in your community board area, there is a big difference between as of right zoning and LPC approval. And oftentimes there's a lot of back and forth between LPC and zoning. A lot of, because LPC doesn't always approve projects that have the most amount of zoning that's allowed. In other words, your FAR is a 0.5, and on your, if it were just a regular project, you'd be allowed X, but the LPC says, well, but you're gonna have to remove this amount and that amount and that amount. And a lot of stuff goes back and forth between there, and that's part of the negotiating process. So to me, what this says is, again, as an urban planner, that all projects are going to be approved for their zoning prior to LPC. And that's a problem, because then the LPC and the public who weighs in on this have less ability to negotiate or get a better project out of that process. Similarly, with the streamlined LPC DOB handoff, it's a similar issue. Rescind outdated open job applications and violations. Now, this has more to do, again, with the public, which is a lot of those outdated open job applications and violations are kind of benchmarks. When we're looking at a bad project, or we're looking at something that has had violations that have occurred, that's kind of like a historical document that allows us to see what has happened at that project prior. And by having the rescinding, by rescinding these and removing these from the documentation, it ends up having a problem in terms of us trying to do the detective work of what happened with a particular project. So I don't think that rescind is the correct term for this. I think it's more important that, again, that those remain where we can find them. Paul?
Well, I just want to mention, I was going to wait till you were done with the page, but as someone who operates from a landmark building in Fort Totten, the Historical Society, you know, the things you're saying about the LPC DOB coordination, that these are spot on. There's no way. It is so difficult as it is to get something landmarked in New York City, and then to make it even, you know, even harder for us to save, you know, buildings of this kind. I'm just agreeing with you, Paul. That's all.
Thank you, Paul. Again, it screams that they're trying to remove public review or the ability to get a better project.
Exactly.
Reduce zoning analysis of NYCHA campuses. Now, I don't believe there are any NYCHA campuses in Board 11. I might be wrong about that. I don't remember. But this is concerning because, as you know, there was a real move across the city to build new housing on NYCHA campuses. Now, that's not bad in itself. In a lot of cases, they're building on parking lots or sometimes on green space, et cetera, which, you know, again, you can negotiate that or figure that out. But reducing the zoning analysis, that's kind of crazy, because now you're talking about saying that. So what they want to do essentially is they want to remove the zoning analysis for the existing buildings that are there. Which is kind of crazy because it's all considered a single lot. So you should be looking at these projects as a whole. If you're going to build new housing, it should be the previous buildings should be considered in that discussion and in that zoning analysis. Next page. Any other questions about that section? Sorry. This is the last page, by the way, after that. Okay. So focusing DOB review on what matters most, safety. Yes, it does matter most. And it's concerning that I had to flag so many things. One of the first thing that's mentioned and the second thing that mentioned has to do with the interim and amended certificate of occupancy and the temporary certificate of occupancy. What some of you may not know is that in the last decade, many, many new buildings are operating under permanent temporary certificate of occupancy. So for those of us who are homeowners who live in Bayside or Flushing or wherever we live, we have to get a C of O in order to live here. You know those giant buildings on 57th Street, Billionaires Row? Most of those buildings are operating on permanent, renewable, temporary certificates of occupancy. These 1,000-foot-tall buildings. So to remove the administrative barriers to issuing temporary certificates of occupancy is, again, shocking to me. Shocking. This just sounds like it's going to make it easier for people not to do the right thing. And the same thing with the next section, which is remove unnecessary address paperwork for Alt-1 applications and revise the requirement for neighboring building pre-construction survey. That one's really a killer because, as we all know, when we have a bad project being built next to us, it's really important that the DOB have the information of what's going on next door so that if damage is done or if anything is happening that's going to negatively affect the surroundings, they should know this. The city should have that on record. It's kind of, it's shocking. Again, it's really amazing. Next section, reducing bottlenecks in DOB review by removing duplication of work by licensed professionals. Okay, now we get into self-certification, the bane of many of our existences. Improve objection and audit process. That sounds good on its face. But,
sorry, Paul, just before we move on, I see Henry's got his hand up.
Henry, oh, Henry, sorry, I didn't see your hand.
It's okay. You can just finish up and I'll ask the question.
Okay, yeah, let me breeze through these two sections, and then I'm around for whatever questions or comments. Okay, so improve objection and audit process. This, again, is creating a standardized checklist. As we all know, when objections and audits are done, it's based on very specific things in very specific projects that are unique to a particular project. Now, we get to the big one for our community. Authorize 1, 2, and 3 family homeowners to file permits without a professional filing. Deep breath. That one means that for quote unquote minor home improvement works, projects, 1, 2, and 3 family homeowners do not need to have sign-offs from architects or anything like this. Plumbing, electric, et cetera. The reason we have these people filing these permits is to ensure that if something goes wrong, the homeowner is covered, that the practitioner is covered, and that is according to code and law. Code and law actually does mean something. This is really a Pandora's box. And indeed, the city council would have to sign off on that. And I don't think they will, personally. I think it's really crazy. Then we get to the next one, expanding authority of licensed professionals. That we're getting into the same thing with self-certification. Now we're getting into this is the description. Allow more construction activity to be performed without the need for plans and plan review prepared by a registered design professional. Unreal. Identify work types that do not need permits. I don't think I need to say anything more on that. Reduce plan review times at FDNY. We get back to the FDNY. Allow DPR self-permitting of site work. That's the Department of Parks and Recreation. Again, that sounds innocuous, but the parks don't have the best record of construction on their own purview. Really don't. So I don't think that's a good idea. Final section, addressing gaps in the building code, rules, and local law. Require a transportation management plan for all significant freight and traffic generating projects. As a requirement of the building permitting process. Again, that sounds like a good idea, but it gets into the CEQA thing. And it's, if you read the paragraph on it, it's not really as positive as it sounds. Develop code requirements unique to waterfront structures. That's actually, again, you'd think that would be something that would make waterfront, which is the most vulnerable part of our city. They actually want to streamline and get rid of code requirements that we currently have on the waterfront, not make them better. Adopt battery storage code. Well, that goes back to what I was telling you about. And again, that was DOB will issue updated rules, removing regulatory barriers to the development of energy storage systems. it speaks for itself. Create a building code for older existing buildings. We already have a building code for older existing buildings. This is about giving people a building code for older existing buildings to get around the current laws. That's what this is about, very clearly. And frankly, is the based on my reading of their statement, it's about actually potentially creating the impetus for ADUs, which we've already had that discussion here. And finally, streamline rules to allow efficient permitting at LPC. And that's just to give more flexibility to the agency to just approve things, period, without the public review and the public input. So that's the short version of a very long document. Questions, comments? Henry, you're first.
Could we get a copy of this for every board member, Joe?
Yeah, we can circulate this. No problem.
And sorry you didn't have it beforehand. I thought that someone had handed it out already. Sorry about that, Bernie.
Yep, okay. No worries.
I can see all these and comment them on them. And certainly the people who are architects and engineers on the board should look at this very carefully.
I agree, 100%. Don't take my word for it. Look at
Everybody should look. Absolutely.
Henry?
Yeah, Paul, where do we go from here as a community board, as individuals? Do we write a letter to the mayor? Do we write to contact our city council people about this? There's so many parts to this proposal. It's very complex. I think the most egregious part is what you mentioned and Carmen mentioned, is that the community members were not part of this discussion, that we were taken out of this discussion. Where do we go? That's my question.
And it hasn't even been presented to the community boards, as far as I know.
No.
Well, yeah, that's what I was, from a process perspective, I mean, this is not proposed legislation right now, right? This is in the works. Someone is going to have to propose legislation. Is that right, Paul?
Well, no. Okay, so there are three levels here. One is that the mayor is basically saying on the majority of these, like 90 out of 111, I don't need anybody's approval. I can do this by myself.
Those are the agency level.
Correct. But my reading of it is, I think that's a little optimistic. I think some of them they can do interagency, but I think some of them they're going to need sign-offs. They're just saying that to see if people are going to flag it and call them on it.
Okay, understood. And then city council level approval, and then state would be state.
Correct, approval. Correct. I think there's one or two that have state, and then there's like 15 of them that are city council. So look, the city council ones are obviously a big deal. All of those are city council or ULURP or both. And these are not minor changes that they're looking for. These are huge changes. So now you guys, when the City of Yes came out, did they present to you? Did DCP present to you?
No.
So they didn't do that either. Right. Nope. So in previous administrations, when they've come out with, give de Blasio credit or anybody else credit, when they've come out with these plans, no matter how half-baked they are, they've at least made the rounds to the community board, correct?
I mean, certainly we've gotten certain presentations, I imagine. I don't know if we've gotten presentations on everything.
Right.
But I mean,
these are pretty far reaching changes.
Yeah. It strikes me.
Carmen, I have dealt with, because I work very close in government, and I do really feel that this is a disaster city, what they're proposing, and a free for all. I mean, they just want to make our city like a third world country. I don't know. And I do feel that we need to reach out to our council members. They should be having hearings about this, because there's no way that the city council could allow for this to go through. This is a disaster. I mean, can you imagine all the fire hazard that could happen? People doing things without a license? I mean, it's just a disaster. We cannot allow this to go through. We need to reach out to our council members.
So what I think makes sense here, we've gotten this presentation tonight. It looks like Paul may have another question. What I think makes sense is for us to call a committee meeting. And I, Henry, you raised this. A lot of these issues are environmental. There's no one committee where every issue that's on this list sort of would touch on. So I think environmental is as good as any, given that there's a lot of touch points with environmental, and that we should have a committee meeting to discuss. We did actually reach out to the mayor's office to see if we could get a spokesperson to come tonight just to offer some thoughts on the points that Paul's making. We weren't able to get that locked in with them. They didn't send somebody, but hopefully we can get someone from the mayor's office to speak. And I think if we set up a committee meeting and we offer the mayor's office an opportunity to come and present, if they don't present, then, you know, it sort of is what it is. The committee can make a recommendation and the board can take a vote on an action that we can take with the benefit of some committee work and a little focus and thought about it.
And sorry, and what I would suggest also is that everybody actually, I mean, if you really want to, read the 65-page book too. All you have to do is read the back pages, which is the appendix. I mean, if you want to read the actual kind of, the stuff, that this is the bullet points that I gave you. There's another 35 pages of their intent. And their intent is to streamline to build 500,000 new units, you know, within the next 10 years. So as I said, don't take my word for it. You should be definitely, you know, looking at it yourself. Mm-hmm. I would ask that, you know, I know you can't vote on this tonight, obviously, or make a motion or anything, but I do believe the smart thing is for you to do your research, do your due diligence, and then decide, you know, sure, if the city wants to send someone and tell me that I'm full of crap, that's one thing, but I don't think that's going to happen, personally. But at the end of the day, I think it's important that the community board go on record once you've made a determination on all of this.
Yep, understood. So, and that's helpful. So that's what we'll do, Henry, after the meeting, if you can coordinate with Joe to set up a committee meeting date so we can get that on the calendar, and then we can try and get someone from the mayor's office. I see two more hands, one from Paul, one from Jyothi. I'm going to take those, and then we're going to wrap up in the interest of time and move forward to our next section. Bernie, I see you as well. Okay, that's what we have on the list. Paul, Jyothi, and then Bernie.
Thank you, Michael. And I'm glad that you want to send this to committee. I think it's a great idea. We can dissect it closely and then make a recommendation for the next meeting. And especially here from the mayor's office. I really, really hope that we can get someone from the mayor's office here. They shouldn't propose a huge list of things like this without, you know, putting it before the community. I just wanted to mention that. So thanks for that, Michael. And I wanted to mention what Carmen said, that the loss of checks and balances. I mean, public safety issues, environmental review, maximizing density, you know, all the stuff that we're concerned about fighting for, it's all threatened again. I mean, we've been here how many times? So, and like I think I said, the first or the second time we dealt with some of these issues, there's more issues here than there were in the past. I said, they're gonna keep coming back, and here we are. I mean, there's no shortage of development in New York City, right? Can someone tell me that there's, I mean, everywhere I go, there's a construction fence in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, and in Queens, and I don't go to Staten Island. So I don't think we have any problems in New York City developing. It's absurd. I'm not going to go through my reasons where it's driven from, but let it be said that there's no shortage of construction. I mean, who are they kidding? And we need more protections, not less protections. So thank you, Paul, for the presentation.
Oh, my pleasure, really.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Go ahead, Bernie, then Jyothi, then.
Yeah, I have a quick question. Two questions. One, Paul, how big is the appendix?
Well, the whole document's about 65 pages long, and the appendix is 1 second. Okay, so the appendix starts at page 30 and it goes to page 60, 63.
It's too large to email.
Okay. No, you know what? I'll get the link. There's a link for it, and
yeah,
then
that's better.
Download it from the link.
Or you can send it in two sections.
Or I can send it from my Google Drive.
Give it to Michael and
I'll send it in my Google Drive.
If there's a link, we can get it.
I'll send Joe. I'll send it to you and Mike. in my Google Drive, and then you can just download it and give the link to everybody.
Perfect. Or yeah, that or the link.
Okay.
The other question I have is to Mike, the committee that you're talking about. What committee is that?
I was going to use environmental simply because we don't have one singular committee for things like this. And there's a bunch of environmental touch points, and Henry had, you know, shown interest in this by bringing it to the board in the first place.
Do you think you might consider an ad hoc committee for this particular issue?
We could do that if there was another. I mean
there are certain people that have deep interest in this. I'm pretty sure that Victor has, and I have, and other people.
Yeah, we can certainly consider that. I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this? If you're interested in this and you're not on the environmental committee, okay, and you're interested in dealing with this at the committee level as opposed to the board level, please send a note to Joe and myself, and we can manage it that way so that we can make sure that people who want to be involved, Bernie, are involved, and people who have the expertise can lend that at committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, Jyoti, last question or comment, and then we're going to move on to new business.
Yes, a great big thank you to Paul. And also, can Joe work in a comprehensive report with Paul's comments? I was trying to take notes, but I couldn't get to everything.
Can you hear her?
There was a little bit of an echo, but I think we fixed that. Go ahead, Jyoti.
Yes. Could we have a report on Paul's comments?
I don't know if Paul has a separate report that he wants to give, but we will have Jyoti. We have the audio will be online, right, Joe, as it always is?
Yeah, the audio will be online. The minutes will be much briefer than Paul's comments.
You guys can always get in touch with me also, and I'm happy to clarify.
And the document's going to go out too.
Yeah, the document will go out as well. So that's your cover. You'll have a lot to chew on, Jyoti.
Exactly. Okay. Thanks, Paul. Thank you so much for coming. As I said, we're going to see if we can get the mayor's office to provide their side of this, but we're going to work on this at committee so that the board can take a position one way or the other. Mm-hmm. We're going to move on to board member new business now.
Very quickly, and then I'm going to leave you all and say goodnight. Joe and Mike, I'm sending you the report right now.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye,
Paul.
Bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, Henry, you're up first. I know you you had wanted to speak.
Yeah, right. We had mentioned last month that the Monopole case was granted. I visited the site yesterday. Litter is still a big issue over there. And they were supposed to develop a plan to control the litter problem, and they haven't. Also last month, we approved an application where they were closing the repair shop and they were opening a fast food restaurant at a certain auto-related business right next to Francis Lewis High School. And we had passed that particular application with the proviso that the applicant contact the principal of Francis Lewis High School to see if he had or she had any concerns about the proximity of this fast food restaurant to the school. They did. They did contact Dr. Marmore, who's the principal, and they sent not only the application, they sent all the backup material as well. And he responded, you know, he thanked them for that. And he is planning to go to the BSA hearing to testify about this application when it's held on January 23rd or 24th. And the last thing was that there are two cases in our area that were pre-certified on January 3rd by the City Planning Commission. The first is an upzoning case in Auburndale at 18910 Northern Boulevard. There's a plan to rezone an entire block so that they can build a 30,000 square foot mixed use building. It's going to be a community facility with a medical facility as well as commercial space. Now, this is very similar to the Mizumi case that we discussed in the past. The question comes up, why don't they go for a variance instead of a zoning change? And at least with a variance, the community would have input as to what would be built there. Once we have a zoning change, that whole block will change. There are three businesses there already on variances. And, you know, that's going to be quite a case, and we'll be coming to our community board soon. The last part that was approved on January 3rd was a private application proposing an amendment to the city map involving the elimination, discontinuance, closing, and acquisition of a portion of 43rd Avenue between 222nd Street and 223rd Street in order to remove the encroachment of the applicant's retaining wall in the map street. This person had built a new house and there was a retaining wall along the sidewalk side. And what happened is it turned out the retaining wall was on city property. So he has to go and get a demapping and to narrow 43rd Avenue in effect. But there's a lot of complications to this and a lot of questions were raised about what happens with the sidewalk, what happens, you know, in the future, if there's going to be plans to widen that particular road. So that's coming to us as well. So I just wanted to give everybody a heads up of two upcoming cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Really appreciate that update as always. Very useful. Thank you. Al, I see your hand up. Doug, I got you as well.
I just have two things. One, on the Sunday of the big game, Alley Pond Striders is having their 3-mile relay. It's 1 mile per person, 3 persons. You hand off by throwing a football about 10, 20 feet. It's kind of a cool race. So if you can get 2 other people, Mike, I'll do it with you and your kid if you want.
Yeah, it's a good offer. Let me talk to the boy.
Okay, and the other thing is I have to talk about the old Vanderbilt Motor Parkway. They tore it up in August, September. Nothing's been done. They're not even monitoring it. This storm came, knocked down a lot of the fencing, and that was a couple of weeks ago, and the fencing's down. I know people are now crossing to go to the school. I think that's 206 there, and it's just, it was what all the people that I know use the path feared, that they would tear it up and they're not going to do anything. And I don't think they're going to do anything until the weather gets better. My understanding from cases I've had with construction cases is that they will need to wait until they can get a group of days above 42 to 50 degrees weather. So they're probably not going to do anything until May. And it's just not right that, again, a pretty major thing, that recreational path, is going to be out of commission for 6-7 months. And a lot of people, I don't want to say nobody, but a lot of people are just walking, running, or doing whatever they want on the path, even though it's pretty torn up and beat up.
Okay. Thank you for letting us know about that. We'll follow up on that as well.
Yeah, and get back to me, Mike. I'll run with you and your kid. It's kind of, it's Upper Alley Pond. It's day of registration. I think it's $10 per person. There's prizes for the top couple of people, and every team gets to keep the football. And it's Upper Alley Pond. I can't say Super Bowl because it's trademark, but it's Big Game Sunday.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Appreciate that. Doug, you're next.
Just a quick update on a couple of things. Number one, 233rd Street is between properties of that overlay that went on Northern Boulevard. It's not built. It's mapped. I think we have to make a concerted effort to get that established and built before they want to abandon it and one of the people that own the properties acquire it. I think it's imperative to that project, which I'll go on to also. I don't know if it was posted, but I got a hold of the work they're doing behind that overlay, the C22 overlay. It's 14 acres. They've already planted 500 new trees, cut down invasive. They want to plant another couple thousand trees this year. So they're getting towards the end of the project. I didn't even know it was there, honestly. I cannot believe it didn't come up. that it was directly behind the overlay. But it is what it is. And third, I did take a look into and checked into the Douglas Road property. that property just transferred August of last year for $600,000. A mortgage was taken out on it just under $1 million a month ago. So I guess it's a construction loan. It's based on the 2015 permit that was issued to them that was renewed in 18 again. In 2020, one was withdrawn, another one in 22 was withdrawn, and recently LPC 22-03963 with an expiration of February 6th was, and that's for the fence. The construction information is not even on Department of Building site. It's a little dismaying, honestly, that you can't find this, and it took me hours to find it. But there is an active permit on that, and fences are going up, and supposedly the changes that were made to the original plans that we know about will be forwarded to CB11 early this week.
Okay, good. Thank you for that, Doug, and we'll look out for those. I'd appreciate the update. So Joe, let me know when we get those changes in, please. Karen.
Hi, just a quick update on the Center for the Women of New York. We were granted, outgoing Congressman Swazi gave us $1 million grant to do career advancement and empowerment for women, which will include referral and advocacy programs, career skill workshop, financial literacy. And we're looking to partner with any other not-for-profit organizations that do that kind of work so we could expand on both levels. On that same thing, the center had gotten a $250,000 grant from the state to do to finish the project in building out the second floor of that. And this kind of goes to the City of Yes issues. All of a sudden, DDC changed its rules and said that now we cannot use our current architect. We have to use somebody on DDC's list, which will cost us an additional $500,000. And we cannot get a hold of the rule change. They will not give it to us. So I'm just saying that because I think it goes to all of this stuff that we were just talking about with Paul Graziano, how things are changing without really any commentary. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Karen, and congratulations on the $1 million. That's fantastic. Good for you guys and for the community as well. Okay, so that wraps up board member new business, the month ahead and adjournment. We talked about the two committee meetings. Currently we've got the Doug zoning this Wednesday and also public relations on January 24th. Look out for any additional invites. Again, happy new year to everybody. Thanks for joining. We're gonna circulate Paul's the report. And also if you're interested in being involved and are not on the environmental committee, please do email myself and Joe, and we'll figure out the best way to approach as a committee in terms of the board taking action. So thanks, everybody. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Mike, real quick. Have not looked at that thing that's coming in front of zoning on Wednesday, look at the plans. It's insane. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Look at those plans in advance of the meeting. I had a motion to adjourn from Stefan. Do I have a second?
Second.
I heard Flora on the second. Meeting is adjourned. Happy New Year. Have a great night, CB11.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Good night. Take care. See you around.